once again, fellow listeners and truth seekers. Thank you for listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, your host for the next 1 hour, and you are listening to Datum Line. In our previous Datum Line message, entitled Dictatorship of Debt, Part 13, we delved a bit further into the subject of ownership as it relates to automobiles and Department of Motor Vehicles. This was chosen as an everyday example to highlight America's transformation from free enterprise capitalism, which was exterminated by the Federal Reserve System, to a socialist, centrally planned and regulated economy. Our free enterprise system was lubricated by lawful money, gold and silver, pursuant to biblical principles, while today's socialist economy is built on a foundation of information-gathering and wealth-confiscating bank credit. All of this is legalized by revised statutes of a predominantly secular humanist culture. Once again, we'll be adding some more flour and dropping another egg into the batter of our previous message so as to make a quick review a bit more interesting for our regular audience. New listeners are encouraged to familiarize themselves with our previous Datum Line messages, which are available in the archives, each one of these forming a continual thread that began with our first message over 1 year ago. Today's review will help connect our last message to this one, while giving new listeners a clue as to how we arrived at this place in our present series. We'll also define two more words, title and admiralty, in our ownership vocabulary, after which we'll quote a historical reference from colonial America in relation to admiralty jurisdiction, a phrase introduced in our last broadcast. Before launching into today's message, however, I want to express my appreciation for those well-organized housewives out there who coordinate large and complex meals, such as when the oven is stuffed with a turkey while all four stovetop burners are occupied by saucepans filled with diverse goodies, each at different temperature settings, along with pies, salads, and other side dishes in various stages of preparation. You can appreciate my efforts at juggling the interrelated topics woven together in this economic series. The entree is lawful money in contrast to bank credit, what I call legal plunder. But this would be an incomplete menu without the side dishes, wherein we must explain the language manipulation used to conceal bank fraud and bank theft, as seen in revised and perverted economic definitions, which undergird all the economic myths and mantras repeated by academia and media, along with the false paradigms orchestrated on the Hegelian dialectic process, concurrent with a shift from constitutionally protected rights under common law to state and corporate privileges granted under revised contract law originating in equity, maritime, and admiralty jurisdictions. The deceptive and coercive methods employed to facilitate our political and economic cultural shift was made possible by swinging our nation's moral compass from a general respect for biblical precepts in 1776 to their eventual repudiation by society and modern theology today. All of these elements were cleverly employed to seduce a mystified, vaccinated, chlorinated, fluoridated, artificially sweetened, and otherwise chemically intoxicated, demoralized, and welfare-dependent population into the global socialist bed with little or no resistance. Juggling all of my side dishes has been a bit of a challenge. Here's our music. This is the first break. You are listening to Datum Line, and I'm Bruce J. McCarthy.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5, or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com and now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
A healthy heart starts with Extendovite. I've always believed that I had to have a strong defense to overcome the new superbugs of today. Extendovite, a 7-herb heart protection cocktail, not only helped me to overcome a massive heart attack, but it also has built up my natural immune defenses against colds and flus. Extendovite has so many benefits that we all should be taking Extendovite to build up our defenses for what superbugs might emerge yet. So start today, clean out the toxins, and be as healthy as you can be. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
Let it be heard.
Welcome back to this segment of Datum Line, and on the other side of the break, I was heaping praise and accolades upon the housewives and the chefs of this world. And maybe it's just my clever little way of garnering a little sympathy in that I'm pretty much doing the same thing, trying to juggle a lot of side dishes while baking an economic entree to perfection, and doing that over the course of several months, which is somewhat of a challenge. I'm actually more comfortable making sandwiches. So again, ladies and chefs of the world, I salute you. Our message today is entitled Dictatorship of Debt, Part 14. And for new listeners unaccustomed to the challenges made in our data mine investigations, such as the fact that America's free enterprise capitalist system is long gone, let me briefly restate the reason why. Free enterprise is defined, according to Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition, as, quote, the right to conduct a legitimate business for profit. So, in a nutshell, if the Federal Reserve and their downtown commercial bank members are legitimate businesses that make substantial profits, which indeed the Federal Reserve admits that they do in the Federal Reserve system, purposes and functions put out by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, and you'd have to turn to the 6th edition for that one. That was 1974. They admitted that the Federal Reserve was not profit-motivated, but it did make substantial profits, which, by the way, were in the billions. Isn't that incredible for not being profit-motivated? I'm glad you know. Anyway, then we should all be allowed, if this is indeed a free enterprise capitalist system, we should all be allowed to create imaginary money like the Federal Reserve does and the commercial banks. And that imaginary money is called capital in the world of financial make-believe. And why would we want to do that? Well, for the noble purpose of stimulating the nation's economy in a freely competitive market. However, if we were to do that as competitors with the Federal Reserve System, we'd go to prison. Why? Because theft is against the law of God, and it's even against the laws of man if you didn't first obtain a federal license to steal, a license to steal from all the rest of us. Furthermore, our economy is not lubricated by the infusions of capital down there on Wall Street, since instruments of theft, like bank credit, are used to confiscate wealth, which is called capital when that wealth is applied to growing a business venture. Gold and silver, which were used at one time as lawful money here in the United States, were used as capital. Bank credit, on the other hand, is fictitious capital, to put it politely. So the bottom line is, when a chosen few are granted a federal monopoly to steal the labor and production of the many, such a criminal system is anything but free enterprise capitalism. You know, economics is a subject that affects everyone, but is understood by virtually no one. And I've said that many times before, and I'll probably continue to say that. And why is this? Well, the answer has confronted you for a lifetime. Modern economics is a sophisticated mind game used by a thieving monopoly to unseat the natural laws of God, common sense, and sound reasoning. That's why so many people, maybe people like you, find the subject of economics, at the very least, boring. Students of economics are to be pitied for having to endure countless hours of nonsense built on a foundation of absurdities in hopes of becoming highly rewarded economists spouting their impressively asinine vocabulary. In several of our previous messages, we entered upon the subject of ownership as it pertains to America's shift from free enterprise capitalism to central planning by the socialist banker elite who claim ownership of a mortgaged planet Earth. The root word in ownership is the word own, and thus contemplates the exclusive possession and use of something, such as, I want my own pair of shoes, which doesn't mean you only get to wear them every other Tuesday. Either those shoes are your own, meaning you own them, or they're not, and you don't own them. Nevertheless, the legal profession found it useful to insert various adjectives in front of keywords like ownership and title to establish a sea of gray in our digression from maximum freedom as absolute owners down through countless layers of subservience as qualified owners. Absolute or allodial ownership meant no obligation, no rent, and no fee to anyone who was superior. And that's in sharp contrast to the socialist ideal of Karl Marx, whose Communist Manifesto, at the first plank, calls for, quote, abolition of property in land and application of all rents of land to public purposes, which we know here in America as the property tax. Absolute title is a hallmark of free and independent people. Qualified ownership, on the other hand, comes in 256 shades of gray and depicts a more or less dependent and regulated population. It was by way of legal tender bank credit, and not by military conquest, that a once free, meaning debt-free, public was cleverly and efficiently enslaved. Can you think of a better way to organize society under a unified global dictatorship than by funding debt with imaginary credit? Well, let's address the subject of title and admiralty for a moment here before taking a quick look at a historical reference to admiralty jurisdiction as mentioned by our colonial ancestors. I'll turn to Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition. Now, I don't regard this as the word of God. I hope you understand. And I suppose I could pull up a Bouvier's Law Dictionary on the same subject, but I'm just going to boil this down as simply as possible. And I hope for those of you who are legal buffs that you'll be able to bear with me. First off, the word title is defined as, quote, a mark, style, or designation, a distinctive appellation or name, the name by which anything is known. And it goes on to deal with the subject of titles, like maybe esquire, lawyer, or other such things, like maybe a doctor, who knows. And then it talks about descriptions of books, the title of a book. But more to our subject at hand, it says, see also, and I'll narrow this down again to the specific subject we've been looking at, defective title, doubtful title, good title, indicia of title, just title, legal title, marketable title acts, merchantable title, monuments of title, non-merchantable title, onerous title. Then we get to the word owner, ownership, and then paramount title, even possession. These are things that you would look for. So evidently a person who has title is a person who might be the owner. That might be a title of a person, right? Are you the owner of this place? Yes, that's a title that would apply to me. With respect to real property law, they say, quote, title is the means whereby the owner of lands has the just possession of his property. The union of all the elements which constitute ownership, full, independent, and fee ownership. Well, fee ownership isn't quite the same thing as a low deal. The right to or ownership in land, also the evidence of such ownership. Such ownership may be held individually, jointly, in common, or in cooperate or partnership form. See, so then it gets watered down. We get into those 256 shades of gray I mentioned. Okay, so title we brought up in the previous broadcast with respect to certificate of title. So are you the owner? Yeah, I have a certificate that says I'm the owner. Now, what about the word admiralty? Well, admiralty kind of conjures up the notion of high seas, doesn't it? And so we'll go to Black's Law Dictionary with regards to admiralty. And let's see if we can find it here, admiralty law. The term admiralty and maritime law are virtually synonymous. Now, virtual synonyms are not actually synonyms, but they're close. And so we'll turn to maritime very briefly. That, again, is high seas, isn't it? And if we look at maritime jurisdiction, it says that jurisdiction over maritime causes is granted to federal district courts. Procedure in maritime actions is governed by the federal rules of civil procedure and supplements to admiralty rules. It goes on to say that substantively, in the United States, it is federal law, and jurisdiction to administer it is vested in the federal courts. Okay, and on and on. Now, if I were to go to Bouvier's, we would have six pages to discuss, a lot of which, of course, are references from court cases. But they're basically saying that admiralty and maritime are fundamentally or in some way synonymous. Our founding fathers brought up the subject of admiralty jurisdiction back when they wrote the Declaration of Stamp Act. This was put out by the Declaration of Stamp Act Congress, which met in New York, New York, back in October of 1765. It was in 1765, earlier in the year, that the English Parliament had passed the Stamp Act, and it was the first direct tax that was levied on the American colonies, and with a requirement that all newspapers, pamphlets, legal documents, commercial bills, advertisements, and so forth that were issued in the colonies must bear a stamp which had to be purchased from the crown. So it was a tax. And our forefathers apparently were offended by that, and they mentioned it in the Declaration of Stamp Act at the eighth paragraph, which says, quote, that the late Act of Parliament, entitled An Act for Granting and Applying Certain Stamp Duties and Other Duties in the British Colonies and Plantations in America, etc., by imposing taxes on the inhabitants of these colonies, and the said tax and several other acts, by extending the jurisdiction of the courts of admiralty beyond its ancient limits, have a manifest tendency to subvert the rights and liberties of the colonists. Here's our music once again. Here's another break. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy. You're listening to Datum Line.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Aerial spraying, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
How important is the air we breathe? Our air purifiers are made with a patent process called Aerin. Aerin is different from ozone. Aerin does not create oxides of nitrogen like other ozone machines. Unlike any air purifiers out there, the Aerin generator adds additional energy, creating higher forms of oxygen. And when the Aerin molecule comes in contact with pollution, the pollution is quickly oxidized. These higher forms of energized oxygen have more power to oxidize pollutants, removing dust, pollen, mold, and other particles from the air. Destroying chemical fumes and toxic gases kills mold, mildew, fungi, and kills many viruses and bacteria in the air and on surfaces for a healthier, cleaner environment. Visit our website, republicbroadcasting.org. That's republicbroadcasting.org. Just click on our online store or call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Be prepared. How important is the air we breathe?
Ari's.com.
Welcome back to this segment of Data Mine. On the front side of this break, I had brought up the Declaration of Stamp Act Congress, October 1765, in which some of our forefathers, ancestors, had taken umbrage with the Crown and Parliament for having not only issued a tax or levied a direct tax on the colonists that was going to be paid for every newspaper, every publication, perhaps even every patriotic publication, who knows. And they saw that as an infringement because, among other things, it was the extension of the jurisdiction of the courts of admiralty, as they said, beyond its ancient limits. And that was a manifest tendency, or would create a manifest tendency, to subvert the rights and liberties of the colonists. Okay, now, what I brought that up for was that just because admiralty jurisdiction pertains to the high seas, and in fact it goes beyond the high seas, it came inland, it was next extended to the Great Lakes and then to the rivers and waterways within the continental United States. But they said that this was going to extend the admiralty jurisdiction beyond its ancient limits. So perhaps when you walk into a courtroom and you see that gold-fringed flag, which would be indicative of the military colors, which anyone in the military is familiar with, and would fall under the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That would suggest that you are in a system of jurisprudence that is something other than the common law, something other than equity. You are in, most likely, an admiralty court, and so on. Well, when our ancestors, what our ancestors, I should say, saw as an infringement of their rights under the common law as Englishmen, their descendants, us, we, embrace by voluntary signature to applications for certificates of title, automobile registrations, and driver's licenses and such things, in order to move upon rivers of asphalt with motor vehicles over which the automobile legal owner has the responsibility to the equitable owner, the bank, who claims to hold a greater right of possession, although the banker loaned nothing, while charging interest for the privilege of our own voluntary debt servitude. But at least the bankers provide impetus for creating lots of government jobs at the local, state, and federal levels so as to regulate our nation of increasingly irresponsible, meaning insured, debtors and private, I should say privilege seekers, of a welfare state. Now, lest we develop a fixation for mashed potatoes, let's return to our main course, which is the pretended reasons that were cited for creating a hybrid fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto central bank called the Federal Reserve System, in response to the many bank lobby-supported proposals of the early 1900s. We'll return specifically to the year 1912 and 1913. You remember we were there a couple broadcasts back, and the publication that I was quoting from at the time was entitled A Christmas Present for the President. It's called A Short History of the Creation of the Federal Reserve System, written by Gerald T. Dunn, and this was put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis several years ago. Anyway, if we turn to page 3 of Mr. Dunn's book, we find a subtitle, which is entitled Two Opposing Solutions. Here again, Mr. Dunn provides us with a false paradigm. I'm not sure if he intends to do that, but that's the way it comes out. Quote, solutions for the inadequacies of the monetary apparatus could be collected in two Procrustean beds. Now, that's an interesting word. The word Procrustean comes from the Greek mythological character Procrustes, who was a giant of Attica, and his proclivity was to abduct travelers, and he would tie them to an iron bedstead, and then he would stretch the victim to see to it that he matched the length of the bed. Now, if the victim was a little too long, he would amputate the legs or the feet so as to shorten him so that he would conform to the length of the bed. So when you use the word Procrustean, in this application here, it means that it's designed to secure conformity at any cost. In other words, drastic methods are Procrustean methods, if you will. So, according to Mr. Dunn, the solutions for America's financial turmoil, which he cited in the 1800s and early 1900s, the solutions to that were to fall into two Procrustean beds, or drastic measures, if you will. One contemplated building on the existing banking structure by first creating some repository holding collective reserves and serving as lender of last resort to banks under pressure, and second, letting banks monetize their best assets by issuing banknotes against them. Okay, so there's your first option. You can have a private central bank. Second option. The second school of reform looked to the Bureau of Printing and Engraving for its solution and summarized its case in the 1876 Greenbacker blessing of legal tender treasury notes as, quote, the best circulating medium ever devised, end quote. Now, regular listeners and those of you who know me from the past know that I am definitely not in the...
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are. Incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. Heartandbody.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
800-477-9256.
Welcome back to this half of Bottom Line. Today's message entitled Dictatorship of Debt, Part 14. As I had mentioned on the other side of the break, there were two Procrustean beds, if you will, to establish a central bank. Now, there are people who say that that was never intended, but that was the intention, and that's why we wound up with one. But they had to kind of get it in piecemeal. The first option was to have a private central bank, a banker, if you will, or a bank of last resort, to lend what? Lend nothing, credit, to member banks, and then to issue notes, system of private banks that would issue banknotes against their best assets, if you will. The second school of thought was to have the Bureau of Printing and Engraving issue United States notes. And those were the two schools. Those were your two choices. You're either going to have a central bank run by private bankers, or you're going to have a central bank run by those same private bankers with a government post that they would occupy. The first plan that I brought up for consideration was the Aldrich plan, and this was named for Senator Nelson Aldrich of Rhode Island. And here, according to Mr. Dunn of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, is what the plan proposed. It proposed to resolve the American monetary problem. I didn't know we had a monetary problem. I thought we had a financial problem. That's what he said at the very beginning. And financial matters deal with bank credit. monetary matters deal with money, gold and silver. Gold and silver, I contend, were not the problem. It was the overissuance. In fact, the issuance period of bank credit. I'll just eliminate all of these wonderful gray areas of overissuance and too many and too much and all of that sort of thing. We won't hem and haw over it. Anyway, it proposed to resolve the American monetary problem through the foundation of a $100 million multi-branch corporation called the National Reserve Association. That sounds a little bit like the Federal Reserve system, doesn't it? Well, there was another option, and that was going to be the Mercado Plan, and that wasn't the one that was finally adopted. The Glass Bill was finally adopted. But I want to bring up a man by the name of William Jennings Bryan, who in popular circles is somewhat of a hero. Okay, now he was a presidential candidate, a Democratic presidential candidate back in 1896. Now, William Jennings Bryan's blessing was needed in order to bring the populist and Democrat vote into a central bank system. Now, here's what on page 9 that Mr. Dunn says in this book called A Christmas Present for the President. Bryan may have been mellowing, but he was still a man whose entire public career and philosophy had been built on the proposition that currency issuance, now we're talking about currency, was a governmental function. Not constitutionally it isn't. That had been usurped by the banks. Well, you can't usurp a power that the government never had. He was exceedingly disturbed at those provisions of the Glass Bill contemplating currency in the form of banknotes rather than greenbacks. So all you greenbackers out there who support that position, listen closely. Page 10, subtitle, McAdoo's Compromise. Secretary of the Treasury, William G. McAdoo, one-time attorney, security salesman, and promoter, never worked harder than he did at the University Club spring luncheon in attempting to bring Bryan, that's William Jennings Bryan, behind the Federal Reserve proposal by making the Reserve Bank notes government obligations. We'll go on. The idea of crossing, in other words, hybridizing, the idea of crossing the greenback and the banknote, making the Federal Reserve notes obligations of the issuing banks and of the government, served its purpose. It resolved at one swoop the controversy of 50 years. Bryan acceded, saying, quote, if the provisions are inserted, the bill would satisfy me and I could give it my hearty support, end quote. This kind of your thesis, antithesis, synthesis. The thesis was banknotes, the antithesis was U.S. notes, and the synthesis was Federal Reserve notes. We'll go on just a little ways further here at the bottom of page 10. Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. McAdoo, turned his talents to devising a rival plan of currency reform, doubtless undertaken in collaboration with Colonel House. That would be Edward Mandel House, the alter ego of President Woodrow Wilson. The McAdoo plan envisaged a treasury bank, a massive issue of treasury notes, and here we go, a sequestration, that means confiscation, of gold. Well, the Federal Reserve Bank didn't open up with the avowed goal of sequestering or confiscating the gold, but 20 years after they opened, that's exactly what they did. So again, your choice was either a privately owned central bank or a government central bank, either one of which would be run by the best crooks in the business. Or do you think Uncle Sam would have hired a team of Amish buggy builders to run their criminal confidence game? Congress would have sold out to the bankers either way, as they did with every national bank, like the First Bank of the United States, the Second Bank of the United States, and you might as well call the Federal Reserve System the Third Bank of the United States. Every time Congress sold out to private bankers, each of the first banks were private banks. And so is the Federal Reserve. These were chartered by Congress. You know, many an entrepreneur loses his shirt when he hires an accountant, a bookkeeper, or a manager with a greedy mindset, a mindset for embezzlement. But white-collar crime is a mystery to the average blue-collar worker. So the financial turmoil of which Mr. Dunn speaks, and which plagued the nation at the turn of the 20th century, was little understood by the average citizen. Thus, it is a phenomenon about which the Federal Reserve delights to browbeat us in their propaganda. Three of their publications selected in an earlier broadcast with respect to bank panics of the 1800s and the one of 1907. These and far more useful revelations from the Federal Reserve are quoted in my recent book, Lawful Money versus Legal Plunder. But now, financial turmoil. How do you find financial turmoil when you're looking through an encyclopedia? Well, you might not find it under the words financial turmoil, the words used by Mr. Dunn. But in, let's say, the New Illustrated Columbia Encyclopedia, 1979, you'll find it under the word panic. Now, I don't know how you're supposed to know to look up the word panic, but there's where you go. So let's turn to the word panic and see what Columbia Encyclopedia, which is published by Columbia University Press, let's see what they have to say about panics and see how much you learn from this. Panic, quote, crisis in financial and economic conditions marked by public loss of confidence. I'll emphasize that word. It'll come up again. Confidence in the financial structure. Panics are characterized by a general rush of investors to convert their assets into cash with runs on banks and a rapid fall of the securities market. Bank failures and bankruptcies naturally follow. Does that remind us anything of maybe the year 2008 and thereafter? Afterward, recovery may be quick or gradual. Students of economic cycles, we'll bring that word up, have paid much attention to the process of panics, but without definitive result. Isn't that strange that students of economic cycles have paid much attention to the process of panics, but without definitive results? What do you suppose that is? Well, we'll discuss that too. Perhaps the earliest panic of modern capitalism occurred during 1720 in France and England, known as the Mississippi Bubble, and we'll be discussing that. It was touched off by wild speculation in the stock of John Law, and we'll be talking about him. John Law's colonizing company. The first real panic in the United States came in 1819, after the War of 1812, and after credit for Western expansion had been overextended. That of 1837 was much more severe. It was brought on partly by banking instability and by President Andrew Jackson's suppression of the Bank of the United States. He's kind of the fall guy. But mainly by irresponsible financial operations in Western lands. The crisis of 1857 was partly caused by massive European speculation in American railroads. Thus, when the panic struck, it affected both Europe and the United States. In 1869, stock manipulations brought on the panic known as Black Friday. In 1873, there was a financial crisis in Vienna, as well as an American panic, marking the bitter contest between agrarians, caught by overextended credit, and the financial interests. That conflict continued and was again reflected in the crisis that came in the panic of 1907. No great panic, they say, occurred again until 1929. However, some of you will know that there was a bank crisis in 1921. And if my math serves me right, the year 1921 comes before the year 1929. Anyway, in 1929, when the stock market crash precipitated a worldwide financial crisis, confidence, there's that word again, was not restored until after 1933. Confidence is very important in confidence games. And that's exactly what banking is. It's a confidence game, as we've defined from Black's Law Dictionary in a previous broadcast. And the effects of the panic were felt throughout the Great Depression of the 1930s. From 1929 to 1974, the Western nations did not experience any panics, although there were a number of business booms and recessions. Those would be called business cycles. I mentioned in a previous broadcast that the most egregious, I guess I'd call it, losses, not only in terms of dollar volume, but percentages, occurred in 1968 that exceeded the crash of 1929. That doesn't seem to get mentioned here in Columbia. Okay, so now, I got a question for you. My first question. How many of these financial panics about which I just read could have occurred in the total absence of banks, banking, and bank credit? Well, the answer is zero. But, of course, that's a ridiculous argument, isn't it? Why? Well, first, because it's too simple. And second, because of a conflict of interest that pits simple truth against America's bank-funded, instant gratification, throwaway lifestyle. And this explains why Columbia Encyclopedia says that students of economic cycles have paid much attention to the process of panics, remember they said that, but without definitive results. When they're desperate to preserve a system of credit that violates every economic principle of Scripture and America's common law, perhaps on behalf of the bankers who funded those meticulous studies, why would their results be definitive? It's much easier to cast aspersions on panicky depositors, wild speculators, and the inelastic nature of that barbaric metal called gold and the lesser barbaric metal called silver. So let's see what is meant by economic cycles, after which we'll address the topic of speculation in the world of John Law. And I can see that with the time we have available, we're not going to get very far in that part of the message. But I'm going to turn to a college economics textbook called Economics Principles and Applications, written by two economics professors, Mr. Dodd and Mr. Hasek. And they have the cooperation of a third economist who's going to review their work. This is now the third edition. This one was published in 1957. In previous broadcasts, I have quoted from one, their first edition, which was 1948. Okay, now Economics Principles and Applications has a subtitle section dealing with the business cycle. The business cycle in this publication is found at page 536 to page 544. That's 8 pages. But you know what? This book is 800 pages long, 797, not counting the index, and the index puts you well into 800. And yet there's not one sentence in this 800-page book about the United States Constitution and how it restricts public offices, all of them, local, state, and federal, to accepting and using nothing but lawful money, which was defined by statute as gold or silver coin of the United States. I'll even quote you one that was more recent in American history, at least up till 1980, and that was found at Title 12, United States Code, at Section 152, wherein it says, the terms lawful money or lawful money of the United States shall be construed to mean gold or silver coin of the United States. That is pretty definitive. Okay? Now, here's what they say about the business cycle. Quote, the national income is subject to various types of disturbance. But the most important, this is the business cycle. That's the cycle that students of economics study, they say, and they couldn't come to any definitive results as to what caused it. What is called a business cycle may be considered as a process of cumulative change over periods longer than a year, during which all parts of the economy display marked changes in activity as they move through periods usually called prosperity, recession, depression, and recovery. I'm going to stop there. Prosperity is caused by the banks infusing the marketplace with lots of credit. That's usually going to be followed somewhere down the road by a recession, eventually a depression, and then they're going to try to recover. Okay? Now, this is the business cycle. Now, they say because of the perverse character of these cumulative changes and their persistence, I'm now on page 537 of Dodd and Hasek's book, because of the pervasive character of these cumulative changes and their persistence during many years, it has been assumed that they inevitably accompany all complex modern national economies. although they appear most clearly in those economies where free markets and private enterprise prevail. End quote. I would say that that's where banks prevail. And it appears that free enterprise and what they call free markets are the cause, somehow, that these must somehow be flawed systems. It's my contention that as soon as you have banks and you've legalized what they do, you no longer have a free enterprise capitalist economy. Anyway, what's wrong with economic speculation? Because they brought that up as well. What is speculation? Well, according to Random House College Dictionary, 1982, speculation is the engagement in business transactions involving considerable risk for the chance of large gains. Well, is there anything inherently immoral or unlawful about taking considerable risk?
Michael Anthony's Private Stock, your source for all natural, high quality, affordable, energizing, rejuvenating, powerful, healing herbal formulas. Hi, I'm Michael Anthony. Over 25 years ago, I designed my own line of herbal formulas to serve as allies in defending the body's health and well-being. My product line is a complete arsenal of protection. To find out more about my exclusive formulas, call 845-231-1094. 845-231-1094 or email michaelanthonysprivatestock@yahoo.com. Michael Anthony's exclusive herbal formula.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
Now it's up to you to do your part.
To the final segment of Data Mine, and because we don't have very much time left in this broadcast, I guess it would probably be propitious a moment to recap what we've discussed already. We have reviewed very briefly the short train of financial panics that beset America during the 1800s and in 1907. And we're only dealing with about, maybe five or six, possibly seven at the outside, bank panics in the space of, 110 years, let's say. So it's not as though these panics were occurring every other week. But those bank panics had a reason. There was a cause. But for some reason or other, students of economics haven't quite been able to agree on the cause of these panics. And I'm going to assert as my premise, and I will continue to build on this premise as I have continued to do so in the past, that bank panics are caused by banks. And that if you didn't have banks, bankers, and bank credit, it would be impossible to have bank panics. But America is a rather heady, lusty, avaricious bunch of people. Not all of them, of course. And there are people who just love to use the money they don't have. Listen to them. Extol the virtues of a credit card, for example. It's fun and it's wonderful to be able to spend money you don't have. Well, the whole system is doing that. The federal government doesn't have any money. There isn't any money in circulation. And, of course, there's somebody out there who's maybe a new listener, and they're saying that's absolutely absurd. Of course, there is, because Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Time Magazine, U.S. News and World Report, everybody tells about the money problem and the amount of money that is infused into the economy. So here's my reward. 100 pounds of money to you, dear listener. If you can identify the substance of the money, measured in dollars, that the government collects, spends, or wastes, or that banks pretend to lend. You'll find an email address, probably at my homepage here at Republic. And if it's not there, I'm sure Republic will give it to you, or will somehow notify you as to how to notify me, my mailing address, or even my phone number. And you can claim your reward. But bear in mind, I've made this reward offer for over 30 years, and I have done that over television, radio stations, as many as 80 stations nationwide, coast to coast, and no one is able to claim the reward. So try on earth, please, to be the first one who can claim that reward. I'm telling you, there is no money in circulation, and credit is not a synonym for money, nor is legal tender. Define your terms, and you will understand. Okay, so we review a short train of financial panics that beset America during the 1800s and 1907. And these were used to justify creating a central bank for the pretended purpose of protecting the non-bank public from future bank panics. You know, like the one we had in 2008 that's not over yet. And other things that they were going to protect us from. Well, you decide whether they've been successful in preventing that. I hope this has been of interest to you. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, and you have been listening to Datum Line. Have a good day.